This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. When the film The Hurt Locker first opened, it seemed destined to be one of those really good films that gets great reviews, but only plays at select art houses and has a very limited audience. A film that proves the common wisdom that Iraq war movies are box office poison. But The Hurt Locker has been rescued from that fate. It was re-released, spurred by 9 Oscar nominations, including Best Picture, Best Director, and Best Actor. That actor nomination is for my guest, Jeremy Renner. He plays Staff Sergeant William James, the leader of an Army bomb squad unit in Iraq, whose job is to defuse live IEDs. He's the guy who puts on the protective suit, walks over to the bomb, analyzes how it's put together, then carefully cuts the wires. James is accurate and brave, but his fearlessness also gets him and members of his team into trouble. In this scene, James and the members of his team, played by Anthony Mackie and Brian Garrity, have been sent to check out an explosion. It's likely the work of a suicide bomber, which would make it outside the team's responsibility. Their task is defusing IEDs.
Jesus. So where's our trigger man?
Burnt up in the flames, man. Suicide bomber. We'll never find a body in that.
What if there was no body? What if it was a remote dead? A really good bad guy hides out in the dark, right? Right here. Perfect vantage point outside the blast radius to sit back and watch us clean up their mess.
Want to go out there?
Yes, I do.
I could stand getting in a little trouble.
No, man. This is bullshit. Look, you got 3 infantry platoons behind you whose job it is to go haji hunting. That ain't our job.
You don't say no to me, Sanborn. I say no to you, okay? You know there are guys watching us right now. They're laughing at this, okay? And I'm not okay with that. But turn off your goddamn torch, because we're going.
Jeremy Renner, welcome to Fresh Air, and congratulations on the nomination.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Now, assuming that you have to have some kind of like port of entry to get into a character's mind, what was yours for the character that you're playing in The Hurt Locker? This is a character who's willing to risk his life every day, not so much because he's a patriot or because he believes in the war. It's in part because taking risks and living in the moment is the only life he's good at. He's not very good at ordinary life. So what was your way into that frame of mind?
I had to figure out what fueled him. So I just sort of had to ask a lot of questions. And if I could tap into what fuels this individual, it makes him really an individual. It separates him from other EOD team leaders, other human beings. So I wanted to make him very specific. And so I had to do a lot of training in EOD. And that helped. And there's a lot of little gems that happened throughout the shooting process and the training process that also informed me of the bomb suit, putting that on. I had no idea what that would be like. But there's a certain walk that came out of that. There's a certain mentality and philosophies that sort of came to my mind about how peaceful and almost beautifully poetic that is inside the helmet and outside is chaos. So there's lots of things just kind of kept informing me.
Now, did they want to use a real Kevlar suit for authenticity and so that you would really feel what it's like? Or did you need a real protective Kevlar suit in case there was some kind of explosive problem on the set?
No, I don't think they put me in harm's way that way. And I know Catherine and all of us were trying to make it as authentic as we possibly could. I definitely wouldn't have chosen to have it be fake suit, even if I had that choice. Because the suit was such a big part of that character, a massive part of that movie, visually and then just physically. If it was a fake suit without all the Kevlar in it, I would have not walked the way I walked. I wouldn't be able to move the way I moved in it. Something very sort of lunar about that suit, you know, in the desert. It's kind of bizarre, and it's such a beautiful visual as well, so... It ended up working out pretty great. I mean, I have a love-hate relationship with that thing, but
right. For our any listeners who haven't seen The Hurt Locker, Jeremy Renner is wearing this bomb suit, and it looks like a space suit. And, you know, it's of course, protective in case a bomb he's defusing does go off. Since this is such an important part of the process for you as an actor, describe the almost ritualistic aspects of putting on the suit, getting prepared to make the walk down to where the IED is and to defuse it, and what it feels like to slowly put on the suit and have the rest of the world kind of drift away as you become encased in this protective garment.
You know, it takes a couple guys to get it on. It's, again, pretty heavy and pretty cumbersome to try to throw it on, right? And it's really quiet. All you hear is the drone hum of a fan in the helmet and your own breath. And you look around for snipers. You're looking around. You're looking for, you know, where the IED is. They're not afraid of the IED. They usually know how it's built before they even get there for half the time. So they're just, again, afraid of time on target and being down there and getting shot at, because they can't stop that. So it's just an interesting sort of kind of peace. For me, it was a very peaceful sort of, I don't know, I put Beethoven Moonlight Sonata in headphones inside this suit. So it was sort of a, I don't know, very kind of almost romantic kind of peaceful place.
Why did you do that? Did you know real soldiers who had done that?
No. I did that for me just to kind of put me in a very relaxed state amongst all the chaos and stress. It's made it sort of like a very kind of, again, it was a poetic kind of thing. And
Now, when you were at Fort Irwin training with real soldiers who were going to actually be defusing IEDs, were there stories that circulated about men who were blown up, or men who were shot by snipers while trying to defuse an IED? Or were the men protected from those stories?
No, they were very generous with their own lives, their own experiences, and very candid about kind of the goings on. I remember one thing that they said that I kind of asked about, like, why do you have a dog tag in your boot? And they all wore them in their boot, and they wore one around their neck. And it's like, well, you know, if you get lit up by an IED, usually you kind of disintegrate into pieces, but you always seem to find a boot. And he's just saying it while he's eating a sandwich, so kind of cavalier about it. And I'm like, wow, that's it's pretty intense. And he's just sort of like, yeah, you just find boots. It just happens.
Did you need security on the set, and did you have security?
Yeah, we had some security, but I never felt like we had to have it. I mean, it's certainly nice to have some Navy SEALs around you and some Blackwater guys. But there may be a few spots where it got a little rocky. You got some guys glaring at you that it looked like they don't like you very much. But for the most part, I mean, 99% of the time, it was perfectly safe. In my mind.
What was the other 1%?
There's a lot of Iraqi refugees that populate, you know, Jordan right now. A lot of Palestinian refugee camps. Very poor. And a lot of kids are running around. And I don't know. There's a few spots where I just feel like this, you know. There was one point where I was talking with Catherine. I had the bomb suit on. And we're going over how she wanted to shoot this one scene. And kids were throwing 2x4s with nails in them down onto us from 4 stories up. And she looked, yeah, we should probably walk away. And I was in the bomb suit, so I would have been fine. But it nearly hit her. And like, wow, we have to. And they're little kids. You know, they throw rocks and the whole thing. And, you know, we throw rocks back and have fun with them. So it wasn't, I think, anything really that dangerous. It was just, you know, it could have been a terrible situation for Catherine. She got hit with that thing.
Now, when you were interviewed on All Things Considered, you mentioned that you had a few breakdown moments, but you had them privately in your hotel room. What caused them?
Well, it's this, the strain, the physical strain was at first, and then it went to a mental strain, spiritual strain, in the sense of, you know, coming from California and having no experiences in the Middle East, and then it being during Ramadan, and just all it was compiled, a thousand things compiled, and I just tried to hold it together and hold it together and hold it together. And then every once in a while, I'd have to go home with a bottle of wine and fully decompress. And sometimes it just came out as a mental breakdown in a lot of ways.
You mentioned it was during Ramadan that you were shooting. How did that complicate things?
Because you can't, and we try to be as respectful to the community and the culture as we could. So eating and drinking out in public or smoking or whatever, everything had to happen at night. And then all the prayers, they have the mosques that go off, I think, is it every 4 hours? I can't remember at this point. But so they lay down the rugs and the things, so we have to sort of kind of respect all their religion and the practices of that. So kind of, you know, did it get in the way or did it help? I don't know. I thought it was pretty kick-ass, you know, to be honest with you. It was beautiful. It was kind of weird at first, those sort of chanting, almost moaning sounds that come out of these mosques, and then it was just became very beautiful as it just echoes through the canyons and the hillsides of this country. It was, oh my goodness, it's just beautiful. So yeah, it did slow us down, yeah, but I think it also helped us in a lot of ways.
When Catherine Bigelow, the director of The Hurt Locker, was on our show when the movie first opened, she said that she cast you in this because she'd seen you as the serial killer Jeffrey Dahmer in the movie Dahmer. Mm-hmm. He was a serial killer and kind of cannibalistic one. He'd eat the remains of some of his victims. And what she said was that you elicited so much honesty and truth and actual empathy for a character who she couldn't even imagine having empathy for, so she was determined to work with you. And she said she needed someone who has bravado and swagger and almost reckless quality combined with a profoundly capable skill set. She needed someone who had the authority to pull off that paradox. And she thought that you could do it. And, of course, she was right. Were you surprised that she'd even seen Dahmer? I mean, you know, really it was not a film that got a lot of play.
Yeah. Yeah, it was big within the movie industry and people within it, but not too much to the public. It was a small little $200,000 movie. I think on paper, I think I know why she kind of wanted me for this.
So she said
I was the only guy. She told me instantly, "You were the only guy to play Will James." And I said, "Well, here's why I think." And I went on for 2 hours on the phone talking about, you know, all the questions and answers that I had for her. I asked her how she wanted the audience to feel and all these sort of things at the end of the movie. But on paper, I feel like Will James could be very unlikable or could be very sort of callous or too cocky or something he had to be likable. Otherwise, audiences will check out and not care.
Since you got the part in The Hurt Locker based on your performance in Dahmer, let's hear a scene from that film with you as Jeffrey Dahmer. And this is from very early in the movie when you're choosing and then honing in on one of your victims. And you're in, I think it's like a sporting goods store, and you're looking through jackets and you're actually looking at this young man who's looking at shoes, and he's eyeing a pair of shoes that he obviously wants, but he maybe can't really afford to buy. So let's hear that scene.
Which ones do you like?
Those right there.
These?
Yep.
I'll buy them for you.
Why would you buy me those?
Because I like to do nice things for people. Makes me feel good about myself.
Are you some kind of nut?
That's sad.
What?
That we've gotten to a point where doing nice things for people is considered insane.
I gotta go.
All right, wait. I do want something from you. I want to buy you those shoes. Then in return, I'd like to take some pictures of you.
See, I was right.
Yeah, you're right. Still a good deal for you. I buy you these shoes. You just got to take a couple pictures.
Well, what kind of pictures?
Just a couple pictures of you, you know, making a muscle, sitting in a chair, you know, looking tough.
I don't know.
Come on. Let's get you these shoes.
That's an example of how kind of seductive you are.
I mean, how
you seduce your victims into coming home with you when they really shouldn't. And a little bit later, yeah. you kind of drug him and knock him out and then drill into his skull.
It's creepy. You know, I'm sitting here talking about it now. It's like, wow, that's really dark, man.
Yeah. What did you do to get into the frame of mind for that? Because it's not like it's a zombie movie, like it's a sci-fi zombie movie. This is like the real thing. Jeffrey Dahmer really did this kind of stuff.
Yes, yes. These are a lot of the things that happened in the movie really happened. And, you know, I had to approach that from a very sort of human thing. I couldn't judge him by what he did. I had to understand, again, what fuels a human being to go to these lengths to do these things. And then I was getting into abandonment issues and having his father not be around and not be able to communicate, terrible communicator, and being... a young gay man at 14, he realizes, and he's just, I had to come up with very human sort of behavior, and you know what again fuels this individual, and why, and I needed reasons why.
Early on, in order to make a living, you correct me if I'm wrong, you worked as a makeup artist.
Yeah, I did.
Now, was that special effects, or was it like lipstick and eyeliner kind of stuff?
No, more lipstick and eyeliner, more beauty makeup. Because I started doing a lot of stage, and, you know, we had to put on our own makeup to do these stage plays. And I remember, you know, when you live in a small town and you're 19 years old, there's not a lot of jobs you can do outside of Pizza Hut and those things like that, right? So I went through this Gottschalks, which is a department store, and I was fragrance modeling, where you get like $25 an hour to spray a card and hand it out to people during the holidays, right? So me and my buddy do this. And we're like, this is awesome. $25 an hour. Like, we're 19. We're like, this is great. And then a position opened up at this Lancome counter. And I decided, I'm like, oh, wow, maybe I should tell these ladies. Maybe they want a guy's opinion on makeup. And that's when it kind of sold them on the idea. And I trying to learn all their products and use all the ladies at the other counters as guinea pigs to constantly learn and grow and be a better artist. And I was always I could always draw and paint and that sort of thing. So I was just thought of the canvas as the, you know, the face. So, and understanding what light does with the eye. And again, this is awesome. I'm putting makeup on beautiful women all day. This is kind of a great gig.
And another odd job that you had, you worked for the police academy training cadets in kind of like a role-playing thing. So you were paid to pretend that you were who?
Yeah, they would. When we were at the college, when we were doing plays and things like that, they asked some of the people in the theater department to come over to the police academy on the other campus. And that was my first paid gig, by the way, as an actor. So I was really excited. So this police academy, it's a bunch of cadets that they're training to learn to become cops, right? So the actual real cops would say, look, okay, these guys are they're students and all, but, you know, we want you to treat them as real situations. So this is what they know. They got a call. It's somebody's unruly, and, you know, they have to come and see what the situation is. So be unruly. And literally, we're in a tiny little room like this booth I'm in now. And you can say what you want, do what you want. Just be unruly. So literally this cadet would come in, and as soon as he walks in, I push him to the ground and kick and spit on him, and he's supposed to try to arrest me. And then I got paid $50 a day to do that.
Were you supposed to actually hurt him? I mean, was that part of the deal?
Well, you know, I didn't try to hurt him too bad, you know, but I guess I made it as real as possible. But I didn't hurt him, you know, but enough to, you know, make it kind of realistic. And then there were situations where there was, like, you know, you find a dead body, or you know, you had to play like a little 6-year-old boy that got you know fondled by or something or whatever. And the women were actually really good at trying to sort of get that information out of you. It's interesting to kind of be on that side of it.
Mm-hmm,
it's so
mm-hmm.
funny. And I was getting paid, and like, this is awesome.
Well, I want to ask you finally about the Oscars. Were you surprised when you were nominated, and were you like waiting by the TV to see if you were?
Yeah, we were, Anthony Mackie and Catherine and myself were on the Today Show in the morning in New York live television, just to make it a little bit more tense than it already kind of was. I'd rather have been sleeping. But it was very interesting to kind of to do that. So I was nervous. I was very excited for the movie. I was pretty confident that was going to happen. And for Catherine, for me, I wasn't sure. I mean, it wasn't out of left field, don't get me wrong, that the potential was there for me to get nominated. But is there any guarantee? No. So the wave of pure ecstasy that came over me was the purest high I've ever experienced in life. It was pretty awesome.
Well, good luck. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Jeremy Renner is nominated for an Oscar for his starring role in The Hurt Locker. You'll find clips from the film on our website, freshair.npr.org. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.